Hello, this is Todd Durakon with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, December 29th, 2020, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page of today's paper under the story Prayer Vigil, Tired of Violence. Central Park Vigil attracts those concerned about shootings. This article is by Donette Beckett, Decatur. Like many in the community, Jackie Walker is tired of the gun violence and unnecessary deaths that have invaded her city. So with a simple request, she asked the community to join her and pray for Decatur and its youth on Monday afternoon. "I've lost a lot of people," she said. "The more people you have in prayer, the better your outcome's going to be." About 24 people met Walker at downtown's Central Park stage area to voice their concerns about the recent violence and to pray for it to end. The weekend before Christmas saw police respond to shootings in which 6 people were shot, including a 10-year-old boy. In the days that followed, 2 men were found dead, one beaten to death in an alley, and another shot multiple times while sitting in a car. Police Chief Jim Getz said at the time that most of the shootings are believed to be part of violent feuds between the Decatur East Side and South Side gangs. The gangs are also believed to have been involved in August shooting incidents, according to Getz. Police have made 1 arrest and continue to seek the community's help with information that can lead to more people being taken into custody. As a mother and grandmother, Walker has witnessed the aftermath of recent shootings with her family nearby. "It happened right outside of our window," she said. Walker, who has participated in local marches, said she has been wanting to organize a prayer vigil for a while. Walker, 52, is a lifelong resident of Decatur. Her hopes for the prayer vigil and other similar community events is for others to become passionate about anti-violence. "When the mothers hurt, I hurt," Walker said. "I just want it to stop." Thelma Sutton, organizer of Pain to Peace Black Advocacy Group, assisted in organizing Monday's event. During the prayer event, she read the names of gun violence victims dating back to 2017. "For the community to come together, whether rain, sleet, or whatever, we thought they would come," Sutton said. "We know these kids, these people." Charlie McGorry has supported Sutton during other events. "We've had way too many kids taken from us by random acts of violence," McGorry said. "I want to be part of the solution." McGorry said he wants to encourage more police and government action. "They need to throw these guys in jail for a long time," he said, "and keep them there." Decatur Councilman Rodney Walker spoke to the crowd encouraging community involvement. "It's not a city problem. City council problem. It's not a Decatur Police Department problem. It's not a sheriff's problem," he said. "It's all of our problem." Walker offered suggestions for the community to end the violence. "All different social groups have to come together with new ideas," he said, "so we can do something different to offer a better future, not only for our youth, but for our young adults." Shamuel Sanders with the Shamila Outreach Center encouraged peace and forgiveness. "I know the hatred that's in your hearts," said Sanders, whose 22-year-old daughter, Shamila, was shot fatally in June, "but it's time to let it go." His focus is on encouraging the youth to look toward the future and letting go of the past. "It's time to break the curse of hatred among each other," he said. "We all can live a peaceful life." Pastor Rod Wilson admitted to the crowd he has seen the violence and understands much of the culture. "There's a lot of folks being caught up in this cycle that don't want to be in it," he said. To end the violence, Wilson said the community must come together. "We have to reject no idea. Every idea might work for one or more of the individuals that need our help," he said. "Our town is too close together to be this divided. This is one city, and we need to work together. Wilson prayed for families and their homes, because it's not safe there, he said. We are praying that another mother before 2020 ends does not have to hold the bloody hands of her son or daughter due to senseless violence. And some photos that accompany the article, photo credit to Clay Jackson, Herald and Review, shows Mayor Julie Moore Wolf left and Councilman Rodney Walker on Monday during a prayer vigil for victims of gun violence at Central Park in Decatur. And another photo here. Decatur Councilman Rodney Walker was among those in attendance at a prayer vigil Monday in Central Park to bring an end to gun violence in the city. All different social groups have to come together with new ideas, he said, so we can do something different to offer a better future, not only for our youth, but for our young adults. We move on to Rockford shooting. Lawyer charged soldier may have PTSD. Michael Tarm and Sophia Tareen, Associated Press, Chicago, an attorney for a U.S. Army Special Forces sergeant, arrested in what authorities called an apparently random shooting at an Illinois bowling alley that left three people dead, told an initial hearing Monday that her client may suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. Duke Webb, 37, faces three counts of murder and three counts of first-degree attempted murder for injuring three others in the shooting at Don Carter Lanes in Rockford on Saturday evening. According to Army Service information, Webb had four deployments to Afghanistan, the most recent ending in July. His lawyer, Elizabeth Bucko, also told the hearing in a Winnebago County courtroom that Webb appeared to have issues with memory loss. She added that he will undergo mental health evaluations, the Rockford Register Star reported. The judge denied bond for Webb, meaning he will remain jailed. His arraignment was set for February 16th. Webb was taken into custody shortly after the shooting and without officers firing a shot, Rockford Police Chief Dan O'Shea said Sunday. The suspect has no known ties to the victims, and authorities believe this was a completely random act, O'Shea said. At a news conference Monday afternoon, Winnebago County State's Attorney Jay Hanley said that Webb was in the Rockford area visiting family, but Hanley declined to comment on possible motives for the shooting. Bucko, the defense attorney, told the Associated Press later Monday that Webb had no prior criminal record in Illinois or anywhere else, something she said was confirmed by a pretrial service report to the court. She added that Webb has been successful in the service for 12 years. Webb joined the Army in 2008 and was on leave Saturday, the Army had said. A criminal complaint released Monday says Webb admitted to the shooting shortly after officers arrived on the scene, even showing officers where he'd placed two guns he had brought with him, a Glock 40 caliber and a Glock 389 caliber. Hanley added Monday that the firearms did not appear to be military issued. The complaint describes the horrific scenes as the gunman opened fire just before 7 p.m. Saturday, first targeting a group of teenagers on the first floor of the two-story building. A bullet ripped through the shoulder of a 14-year-old girl and a 14-year-old boy was hit in the face. Both survived. Thomas Furseth, 65, was on the first floor and began running towards the stairs to the second-floor bar when the gunman fatally shot him in the torso, according to the complaint. He managed to get to the second floor before collapsing. The gunman then went up the stairs himself and opened fire in a bar area filled with up to 25 people. Dennis Steinhoff, 73, was fatally shot in the torso. Jerome Woodford, 69, also was fatally shot, and witnesses later described seeing Woodford falling from a second-floor balcony. His body was found below the balcony in a parking lot. Tyrone Lewis, 62, survived but was listed in critical condition. He was shot while in the bar area in the thigh, back, neck, groin, and buttocks. According to the Army, Webb's first deployment in Afghanistan was from August to December 2009. His other deployments were from October 2013 to April 2014, from October 2014 to April 2015, and from January to July of this year. Webb was twice awarded the Bronze Star. Among the other awards he has compiled with the Army was the Army Good Conduct Medal, the Global War on Terrorism Medal, and the Combat Action Badge, according to the service information. The Army has said Webb is a Special Forces Assistant Operations and Intelligence Sergeant assigned to Elgin Air Force Base in Florida. I'm sorry, that's Eglin, not Elgin. Eglin Air Force Base. O'Shea did not explain why he was in Illinois. The 14-year-old boy shot in the face was airlifted to a hospital in Madison, Wisconsin, in stable condition, and a 16-year-old girl who was shot in the shoulder was treated at a hospital and released. Major General John Brennan, commander of 1st Special Forces Command Airborne, said in a statement Sunday night that Webb's alleged actions were shocking and completely out of character with Webb's 12 years of honorable service. Rockford is a city of about 170,000 residents, about 80 miles northwest of Chicago. The bowling alley was closed when the shooting happened, in accordance with restrictions imposed to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, O'Shea said. But a bar upstairs was open. The chief said the upstairs venue has double doors that open to the outside, ensuring the bar is in compliance with Illinois' COVID-19 mitigation guidance. Most of the people at Don Carter Lane's escaped or hid, O'Shea said. Teens who were wounded were picking up food at the carryout section of the bowling alley, he said. And there's a photo here outside of bowling alley. People speak with Rockford police at the scene of a shooting at bowling alley Saturday. And there is looks like a staff photo, December 13th, 2019 photo provided by the U.S. Army shows Sergeant First Class Duke Webb, who is currently serving as a Special Forces Assistant Operations Intelligence Sergeant. Photo courtesy of U.S. Army via AP. Relief bill. House okays checks for $2,000. Some Republicans cross over. Outcome in Senate uncertain. Lisa Mascaro and Jill Colvin, Associated Press, Washington. The House voted overwhelmingly on Monday to increase COVID-19 relief checks to $2,000, meeting President Donald Trump's demand for bigger payments and sending the bill to the GOP-controlled Senate, where the outcome is highly uncertain. Democrats led passage 275 to 134, their majority favoring additional assistance, but dozens of Republicans suddenly joined in approval. While Democrats favored bigger checks, Congress had settled on smaller $600 payments in a compromise over the big year-end relief bill Trump reluctantly signed into law. The president's GOP allies opposed more spending, and Trump's push puts them in a difficult spot. The vote was a stunning turn of events from just days ago when the House Republicans blocked Trump's demands during a Christmas Eve session. After Trump spent days fuming from his private club in Florida, where he is spending the holidays, dozens of Republicans preferred to link with Democrats rather than buck the outgoing president. Senators were set to return to session Tuesday, forced to consider the measure, and amid stark GOP divisions, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi declared, "Republicans have a choice. Vote for this legislation or vote to deny the American people the bigger paychecks they need." The showdown could end up as more symbol than substance. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican Kentucky, has declined to say publicly how the Senate will handle the bill when Democrats there try to push it forward for a vote on Tuesday. After the robust House vote, Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer warned there is no good reason for Senate Republicans to stand in the way. There's strong support for these $2,000 emergency checks from every corner of the country, Schumer said in a statement. Leader McConnell ought to make sure Senate Republicans do not stand in the way of helping to meet the needs of American workers and families who are crying out. And we move on to local and state, page A3. start with a large photo here. Winter weather preparation. Ace Hardware store manager Mark Daniels left and department manager Sherry Hooker talk in the weather section on Monday at Ace Hardware at 2809 North Main Street, Decatur. The National Weather Service in Lincoln predicts a 20% chance of snow on Tuesday in Decatur, with both rain and snow possible in the afternoon and 1/10 to 1/4 inch of precipitation. Man's house sprayed with gunfire. Accused shooter in incident is a felon. This article is by Tony Reed, Decatur. Police say a Decatur man who got into a fight at a bar sought revenge on his opponent by spraying the man's house with gunfire. A sworn affidavit from Decatur police said the house was shot up on September 4th, and officers found and arrested the 29-year-old alleged gunman Thursday afternoon at an address in the 600 block of West Forest Avenue. The affidavit said the homeowner told police he had known the gunman, quote, for many years, unquote, when he got into a fight with him for unspecified reasons at a Decatur bar. The homeowner then left for home in the 2000 block of North Edward Street and, 30 minutes later, had seen the gunman's sport utility vehicle drive past his home before making a U-turn and heading back. The homeowner advised he then observed the gunman lean out the passenger side of the SUV and begin firing a pistol towards his residence, said Detective Tim Whittemer in the affidavit. He advised the SUV turned eastbound on West Harrison Avenue, and then gunshots continued as the SUV went out of sight. Whittemer said the house was riddled with 15 bullet holes, and police later recovered 19 spent 9mm shell casings from the street. The alleged gunman was booked on a preliminary charges of aggravated discharge of a firearm and unlawful possession of a weapon by a felon. Whittemer said the man was also on parole at the time of the shooting, and he was further charged with violation of that parole. A check of Macon County jail records Monday showed that he remained in custody with bail set at $250,000, meaning he must post $25,000 to be released. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. And entertainment takes a break. Donette Beckett, Decatur. Fairs, festivals, and shows, concerts rely on people, and lots of them, for survival. The year of 2020 and social distancing made for a difficult season for many in the entertainment business. Some programs and events adjusted to the times, while others are still uncertain of the future. In recent years, the Decatur celebration has been challenged with low numbers of visitors and financial returns. What would have been the festival's 35th year was canceled in April due to COVID restrictions. The celebration board later voiced their concerns about the 2021 season and beyond. The future of the Decatur celebration is very uncertain, and our greatest concern at this time is the lack of financial resources, board chairwoman Claudette Davis said in November. The board continues to seek a cash infusion of at least $150,000 or a collaboration, it says, is needed to keep the festival going. By June, the opportunities for any national entertainment in Decatur were squelched when Nelson's Park's Devon Lakeshore Amphitheater was forced to cancel its 2020 shows as well. We want our guests to have the experience they expect when they come to Devon. With the current restrictions, we don't feel that we could offer that in the time remaining in the summer. Mike Wilcott, general manager of the Devon, said after the decision to cancel their second season. Sullivan's Little Theater on the Square lost most of its revenue by canceling the entire summer season. We lost out on over 40,000 people coming to Sullivan this year, said Executive Director John Stevens. That not only hurts us, but the surrounding businesses in our area who rely on visitors coming from out of town to see a show at the Little Theater. Your financial support is needed now more than ever. Other popular shows readjusted their performances to fit the times. Millikan University's popular holiday concert, Vespers, was shown online with clips from the past. For more than 60 years, the show has been one of the university's most popular annual events. Several other shows took advantage of technical options. National ragtime piano player Julie McCleary Smith gave another popular holiday performance seen on the screen. The event was a Salvation Army fundraiser, performed on stage with a few audience members available for audible clapping. This is number 6 in the top 10 stories of 2020, and the sidebar says the Herald and Review is counting down the top stories of the year. Visit herald-review.com/letters to share your thoughts about the picks. Increased patrols lead to arrest. Tony Reid, Decatur. Heightened police patrols looking to curb a recent spate of gun violence in Decatur arrested an armed man Christmas Day who is listed in a criminal database as being a member of the notorious Black P. Stone Nation gang, according to the sworn affidavit. The 25-year-old man had been spotted in a car around 8:48 p.m. in the 200 block of West Garfield Avenue, then swerved around another vehicle and took off at a high rate of speed when it encountered a police squad car. Officers were operating a two-man proactive unit due to the recent uptick in gun violence in the city of Decatur, said Decatur Police Officer C. Zills in the affidavit. Zills said officers had taken off after the vehicle and found it parked in a driveway in the 300 block of West Birchie Court. The man, who has a suspended license and is on patrol, emerged from the vehicle saying the woman was driving, but she said he had been at the wheel. Zills said running the man's name through LEADS, Law Enforcement Automated Data System, shows he was a gang member of the Black P. Stones. He was also shown to have convictions for two offenses of aggravated battery along with criminal damage and two domestic battery convictions. The man was booked into the Macon County Jail on new preliminary charges of the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, 2 counts, and violation of parole. A check of jail records Monday showed he remained in custody, with bail set at $75,000, meaning he must post $7,500 to bond out. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. Not guilty plea on sexual assault charges, Tony Reid, Blue Mound. The man accused of repeatedly sexually abusing 3 Blue Mound girls, aged 15 to 10, quote, throughout their childhood, unquote, is pleading not guilty to the charges. Hunter J. Chumbly, 20, is facing 1 count of predatory sexual assault on a victim under the age of 13 and 2 counts of criminal sexual assault on victims under 18. He is also charged with aggravated criminal sexual abuse involving a child and 2 counts of criminal sexual assault involving the use of force. Chumbly had appeared in Macon County Circuit Court on December 22nd with defense attorney Kevin Sanborn. He waived a preliminary hearing in which Judge Phoebe Bowers would have had to decide if there was probable cause to hold him over for trial. After he entered the not guilty pleas, Bowers assigned the case to Judge Thomas Griffith and scheduled a pre-trial hearing for January 25th. Chumbly is free on $300,000 bail after posting bond of $30,000. Prosecutors had asked for bail of $500,000. His bail conditions forbid any contact with the alleged victims in the case. A sworn affidavit from Blue Mound Police Officer Clayton Graven said he had started an investigation December 6th after being informed of the allegations against Chumbly. The victim stated they had been sexually assaulted throughout their childhood years, with the most recent assault on Sunday, November 29th. Graven wrote in the affidavit, the officer described all the assaults occurring at the same address in Blue Mound. The affidavit quotes Chumbly as telling a relative who had called him and asked him to surrender himself to police that he was, quote, sorry about what he had done to the females and, in parentheses, asked the relative to tell them he was sorry, unquote, according to Graven. Okay, moving on to our next item here. All right. Well, we're on the Nation and World, page A8, and sure signs of winter. There's a beautiful, bright red municipal snowplow. It's massive. Major storm socks Southern California. Photo credit to Snow Valley Mountain Resort via AP. A snowplow clears a road near the ski area at Running Springs on Monday. In the San Gabriel Mountains of Southern California, which saw its first significant storm of the season, lightning flashed and thunder sounded as the storm front swept across the region overnight, unleashing downpours, followed by bands of rain and snow that continued through the afternoon. Okay, let's head over to the weather page and wrap up, as we have a very limited time for the end of the first half hour reading. So we're on page B8. The WCIA 4-day forecast today: mostly cloudy, high of 35, wind east southeast 10 to 20. Tonight, cloudy and breezy, low of 33, wind south southeast 12 to 25. Wednesday, milder with rain, high of 47, low of 26, wind south 10 to 20. Thursday, partly sunny and colder, high of 33, low of 30, wind northeast 8 to 16. And Friday, cloudy with a bit of snow, high of 40, low of 23, wind south 10 to 20. And the regional outlook: a low pressure system will be settling into the area later Tuesday evening, bringing rain and snow showers before a transition to mainly rain for Wednesday. Another system will be back Thursday. Well, that brings us to the end of the first half hour. That seemed to fly right by. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, December 29th, 2020. Please stay tuned.